Today I'll read a few excerpts from Navabraja Mahima. You have to excuse that this is unedited. And I'm reading from the Parikrama portion, which is doing Parikrama about New Brajadam. And this is the 14th chapter, which is about Sanket and Bahulavan. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on Parikrama of Vrindavan, he came to Sanket, and sitting upon a large rock, he heard the different pastimes Radha and Krishna enjoyed here. While hearing of the divine couple's meeting, Lord Chaitanya closed his eyes to savor better Radha's emotions on that summer night during which Providence fulfilled her lifelong desire. Deeply absorbed in the mood of Srimati Radharani, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tasted Shyamasundara's qualities by the unique nature and intensity of her love for Krishna. When he fully realized these two opulences, Radha's emotions and Krishna's qualities, the Lord tasted the distinctive bliss that Radha feels when she savors the sweetness of Krishna and of Krishna's love. O Lord Chaitanya, great ocean of the nectar of pure love for Lord Krishna, I offer respectful obeisances unto you. Do you sometimes remember thee among the most wretched of all wretched people? That's a quote from Sanatana Goswami. Gopal Bhatta Goswami lived for many years in an underground chamber next to Sanket Devi, where he remained deeply absorbed in remembrance of the Sanket pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Other Goswamis also stayed at or visited Sanket to see Sanket Kunj and other pastime places like the Rasa Mandala, and near to it the tree upon which the gopis swing the divine couple. These great devotees would bow to the place where, after leaving the gopis in the midst of a rasa dance, Krishna brought Radha to lovingly decorate her with flowers, and where Radha made curls in Krishna's black hair, painted pictures on his moon-like face, and from where, after thus decorating each other, the divine couple left for Kokilavan forest. At Sanket, Vaishnavas also celebrated a mock wedding of the divine couple, which was arranged by the gopis in their eagerness to heighten loving exchanges between Radha and Krishna. One such celebration took place during the time of the Goswamis, when Shyamananda Thakur accompanied his spiritual master, Vridayananda Goswami, on a tour of Vrindavan. The devotee audience watched the performers enact the rasa dance of Sanket. While Krishna danced at their center, some gopis danced around him. Others sang, and yet others played musical instruments. Shyamananda was so absorbed in the performance that he fell unconscious to the ground, and after some time he began to roll in the dust, calling out the names of Radha and Krishna. Absorbed in the identity of a gopi, Shyamananda placed a cloth over his head and danced madly alongside the performers, drenching his clothes and body with the tears streaming from his eyes. At the sight of such an exuberant display of gopi bhav, Vridayananda Goswami, who shared the attitude of fraternal love of his guru, Gauridas Pandit, was transcendentally offended. Without saying a word, Vridayananda abandoned the performance and retired for the night, thinking, Shyamananda is certainly a maidservant of Radha, who has no place in my circle of gopas. In the morning, Shyamananda came to offer obeisances to his guru, and Vridayananda, his anger unabated, burst out, saying, since you have discarded the devotional mood you received from me, you should go. Shyamananda humbly replied, Gauridas Pandit is Krishna's close friend, Subal, but he always helps Krishna meet Radha, and when they do, he engages in services to them within the Kunj. That's a lie, roared Vridayananda. Pandit Thakur never spoke to me of such things. You must behave like a sukha and don't even think of accepting the mood of a gopi. Shyamananda replied quietly, I cannot do that. This answer so enraged Vridayananda that he picked up a stick and struck his disciple repeatedly until bleeding Shyamananda fell to the ground. The other devotees appealed to Vridayananda, but Shyamananda addressed them saying, please do not try to correct my spiritual master. I'm very happy that he has beat me thus. Today my spiritual master has acknowledged that I am his own property, and therefore his chastisement is like cooling sandalwood paste that soothes my body and mind. Finally, Shyamananda turned to Vridayananda and said, Prabhu, please be merciful to me, an ignorant fool who has disobeyed your order. Please forgive me. The devotees were awestruck by Shyamananda's conduct, and they glorified him throughout the day. even as they bathed, cooked, ate, and visited the kunjas around Sankirtan. When night fell, the pilgrims rested beneath trees, and as Hridayananda Goswami slept, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him in a dream, his hands, legs, and back marked with red welts. Seeing the Lord's injured body and blood-stained clothes, Hridayananda gasped in horror. O Lord, what has happened to you? What is the explanation of this horror? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, this is all you're doing. You beat Shyamananda, who's like my second self, and naturally all the injuries that you inflicted upon him have also come upon me. Hridayananda fell at Lord Chaitanya's feet and sobbed, I'm lost. No one can save me from the hell that awaits me. O Lord, I had no understanding how dear Shyamananda was to you. I have committed an unforgivable offense to a great soul, and thus I have also offended you. Since there is no forgiveness for such a sin, I shall commit suicide by entering into fire. Merciful Lord Chaitanya was pleased by Hridayananda's penitent attitude, but as atonement for his sin, the Lord ordered his devotee to sponsor 12 festivals for Vaishnavas. At daybreak, Hridayananda Goswami called Shyamananda and the other devotees and narrated every detail of his dream, as well as the Lord's order to hold 12 festivals. The devotees, however, after having witnessed Hridayananda's brutality against the faultless disciple the day before, were reluctant to participate in any celebration that would involve him. But then Hridayananda turned to Shyamananda, explaining, I punished you unjustly, but because you did not take offense, you saved your guru from sinful reaction. You have delivered me from hell. Placing Shyamananda on his lap, Hridayananda declared, from this day on, you are not my servant, but my very life. In humility, Shyamananda fell at his guru's feet while the devotees chanted Hari. Seeing Hridayananda's change of heart, the devotees' attitude towards him softened and they gave their blessings for the inauguration of the 12 festivals ordained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The devotees sent Shyamananda to Vrindavan where he solicited Jiva Goswami's help in acquiring the ingredients for the festivals, which were later conducted with great pomp and success. Remembering these events, I smeared the dust of Sanket over my face and body, dust that had touched the feet of Shyamananda Prabhu, dust that would bestow unflinching faith in Guru, my ultimate goal. Now, I'm moving forward to reading about Chatikar. After the incident in which Krishna toppled the two Arjuna trees, the cowherd men began to consider that Mahavan was too dangerous a place in which to peacefully raise their children. Moreover, Krishna had also developed a desire to play in the soft sands of Vrindavan, and he therefore entered the hearts of the village elders to inspire them into changing their place of residence. At a council meeting, Upananda said, O King of Braj, since the birth of your all-auspicious son, our community has been beset with dangers in the form of terrible demons like Putana and Trinavarta. We can only guess that this place, Mahavan, causes these difficulties, and therefore we recommend that our people should move to the forest of Vrindavan, where the goddess of fortune resides. Vrindavan is pleasing in all seasons. It is opulent with sweet grasses for our cows, and for those who live there, the wealth of the worlds becomes as insignificant as a clump of straw. Although Nanda Maharaj was attached to residing in Brihadavan, because his subjects were unhappy there, he accepted their proposal and replied, I agree. Let us move to Vrindavan at once. In the days that followed, the cowherd men and women gathered together all their family possessions and loaded them up on nicely ornamented bullock carts. Then, on an auspicious day, they herded together their cows and other livestock and began a two-day journey to Vrindavan, crossing the Jamuna at its shallowest point and setting up camp at Chatikar. With their carts, the cowherd men formed a semicircle, Chatikar, boundary wall, which extended from Kaliagat to Govardhan Hill, and almost reached as far as Nandagram to the north. Since Nandagram had not yet manifested as the capital of Nanda's kingdom, and since Mahavan had now been abandoned, the opulence of those two places entered the arena of Chatikar. Thus, when Krishna and Balaram saw Vrindavan Forest, the Jamuna River, and Govardhan Hill, manifestors of their own divine potencies, they enjoyed great pleasure. And when with smiling faces and playful gestures they expressed their pleasure in half-broken language, they gave great pleasure to their parents and to the other Vrijbasis. As Krishna entered boyhood, he became more interested in playing with his friends than in being with his parents. With only play on his mind, he begged his parents to allow him to tend the calves. Yashoda told her husband, How can your son, still on his mother's breast, accept such painful work? pulling on his mother's apron and with a voice full of magic, Krishna cut in, "Mother, do not interfere with my desire to tend the calves. I will not listen to any objection that you raise against this great fun. Just give me your permission, please." Yashoda surprised her husband by accepting Krishna's petition, and so on an auspicious day selected by Brahmins, Brajaraj took Krishna and his contemporary friends to the barn. Nanda Maharaj selected some calves for Krishna, some for Balaram, and he then handed his son a red stick and showed him how to control the calves and what orders to give them. Jumping up and down, restless Krishna replied, "We know how to tend calves," and his doubting parents said, "We know that. But still, do not wander too far away and come home early." The gopas showed off their skill at looking after the calves, and when they had convinced their parents of their competence, they wandered into the pastures at the edge of Vrindavan forest. Day by day, Krishna wandered further and further afield with his calves and friends, exploring the forests and meadows of Braj, reveling in his newfound freedom. Krishna's ecstasy grew. The bluish color of his bodily effulgence covered Vrindavan forest. The golden radiance of his sparkling smile warmed the forest creatures, and his red-tinted sidelong glance enlivened his friends. Vrindavan forest, which naturally resounded with the singing of birds and humming of bees, became further enriched with the lowing of calves, blowing of buffalo horns, and the sounds of happy laughter. Above all, as Krishna became more adept in music, the vibration of the flute became an integral aspect of Vrindavan's resonance, echoing across its valleys, through its forests, and over its waters. While the calves grazed, Krishna and Balaram played with their friends. Sometimes they threw stones at the fruit in the trees, and when the fruit fell, they would either kick or throw them. At other times, they would imitate the fighting of bulls. Some boys would cover themselves with blankets, and as the other boys goaded them on, the bulls would roar loudly and charge each other head-on. To witness these wonderful pastimes of Krishna and Balaram, the demigods fell unconscious with bliss, and the Vrijbasis, especially the boys' parents, were suffused with ever-increasing delight. Before sunrise, Yashoda tenderly woke Krishna, cleansed his mouth, rubbed him with oil, bathed him, anointed his eyes with kajal, dressed him, and decorated him with valuable ornaments. Ushering her son into the dining hall, she fed him many tasty, nourishing foods, and then she would follow him into the pasture, saying, "I will walk with you to the forest's edge." But after a short while, Krishna would lovingly turn to his mother and urge her to return home. Free of parental supervision, the boys would explode into unrestrained, high-spirited play. When the playful calves saw the conduct of their gopa guardians, they would jump around as only calves can do, further enhancing the rambunctious atmosphere. And when the boys began to tire, Yashoda's servants would arrive with a morning snack of delicious edibles, which, with much laughing and joking, the boys would eagerly consume. Srila Prabhupada said, "Krishna and Balaram would have opulent preparations along with puris and kachoris, while the cowherd boys would have simple foods with chapatis. After all, Krishna was the son of a king, and his friends were simple cowherds. But when they sat together to eat out of loving affection, the boys would eat Krishna's puris, and he would eat their chapatis." Invigorated by the repast, the boys continued to play, and as they did, Krishna's ankle bells filled the forest with enchanting, tinkling sounds that made songbirds hide their heads in shame. In the late afternoon, Krishna returned to the waiting arms of his love-struck mother, who would personally bathe, dress, and feed him, and then lay him to rest on a jeweled bed. In this way, Krishna passed his boyhood in the company of loving friends and under the supervision of his parents, and as Kamsa dispatched them to Braj, Krishna also killed demons one after another. Hare Krishna.